Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I'm Brad Rose. I am an artist, a composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalis, and someone who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on a guest to talk about the songs, the music that has meant a lot to them and left its mark. Previous guests include Charmaine Lee, Glenn Donaldson, Ethan Miller, Cap Aird, Hayden Pettigo, so many more. But this week, I am so excited to have Marissa Nadler on the show. Marissa and I go back, way back. I think we figured out it's 20 years. So long ago in a past life, I ran a label called Digitalis Recordings, put out this 3-CD compilation called Gold Leaf Branches, and Marissa had a song on it. That was in 2005. Just been a big fan of her work, followed it for so long. She has a new record that is out this Friday on August 15th called New Radiations on Sacred Bones. It's a phenomenal record. I'm always really excited when an artist that I've been following since very early on, very familiar with their work, and just you love to see the sort of like journey and growth of them of artists as they, you know, move through the world and do different things, and their craft and their process changes and grows, all those things. This feels like Marissa landed on this moment that is so, it's just like so singular and special. And I don't know, I've listened to this record a lot this summer, and I think it's my favorite record she's done, which is, again, that's so, I love, you know, 20 plus years into someone's career, you can say, man, they just made my favorite record that they've done. Yeah, so hats off to her. It's a hell of a record. I hope you listen to it. This conversation was a lot of fun. It's so good to connect with these lifers who, you know, we've been in the same world for a long time. So hope you all enjoy the episode. My guest today is a songwriter, a musician, a singer, an OG, and a lifer. It is Marissa Nadler. Woo! How's it going?
I like that description. I'm good. I'm doing okay. How are you?
Doing all right. You know, I gotta always call out the fellow lifers who've been at this for as long as you have. Like, we were just talking before we started. Like, we've known each other for 20 years, basically.
Yeah.
Which is
crazy.
Half of my life, practically.
Me too. Yeah, it seems like yesterday in some ways, and then another lifetime in other ways.
Yes, for sure. So you've got a new record out, New Radiations, which is out on August 15th on Sacred Bones. I'm curious the story behind the name. I love the album title so much. It's obviously a song too, if my memory is serving me correctly. Mm-hmm. But is there a particular story behind the name?
Well, it is a lyric taken from the song of the same name. And, you know, it's hard naming albums because you're like, oh, how do you sum up a couple years of your life or more in two words that it's going to sound cool or have meaning. And I do think that this record thematically touches on some new radiations, you know.
Nice.
It is not in theme similar to my early stuff. There are no woefully left behind women drowning in rivers. Like, that would only be like the first or second record, but it taps into a different type of taps into something different. So yeah. And
yeah.
Also it plays off that Lou Reed record title a little bit.
One of the things that I think it was maybe in the some of the press stuff I got about the record, but you talked about these songs being kind of more raw and more intimate. And I'm curious, like, what was the emotional landscape that you were inhabiting, like, while writing this record and working on this record?
It's kind of a similar landscape to what it sounds like. This room you're looking at is the room that I make a lot of my work in. And I think that as we get older, our lives get more insular. And mm-hmm. I especially have a tendency to get very reclusive. And this record is a really like singular focused effort without a lot of outside influence. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make a stripped down record for a variety of reasons, but touring the album was something I had in mind. Having the Path of the Clouds was this like bombastic, psychedelic, really mm-hmm. Produced. I produced that too, but I wanted to make it a little more simple to tour, just the songs without a drummer, just because I was tired of the whole full band thing.
Right. Yeah. Which is interesting because there are a lot, like, it definitely does feel stripped down, but there also is a lot of there's a lot of different like sonic textures on the album, like the Hammond organ and the synths. And I'm curious how you like, especially in sort of the producer chair, I guess, if you will, like thinking about balancing these sort of atmospheric elements with your voice and guitar still kind of at the core.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I lamented the fact that I didn't play a lot of guitar on The Path of the Clouds. And my partner, Milky Burgess, played on that one, Strangers, and this one. And he knew that I felt that way. So I play all the acoustic guitar. Mm-hmm. And he was really good at knowing that I kind of wanted to make a Nebraska kind of record. Randall Dunn was like, this is your Nebraska. And I'm not comparing myself to Bruce, but I had something sonically in mind, that would be it. Or Songs of Love and Hate, where the instrumentation doesn't get, it just supports the song without overwhelming it, gives it a bed to live in. So Milky was just great it's not easy to play soft and subtle. So I'm lucky to have found somebody that can.
Yeah. Speaking of Randall, and he came up in another recent episode I did, cause I had Charmaine Lee on, who
love her.
Yeah. Charmaine and their tour they're about to embark on still is insane to me, but I'm just curious, like, what kind of, like, what it was like working with Randall on like the mix and stuff.
It was interesting because I almost had him produce it, but I've worked so hard at honing my skills and learning Pro Tools the past 5 years that I wanted to stick with it and just keep getting better to have that autonomy and control creatively. But that being said, Randall is a master of atmosphere and so good at what he does. And he doesn't do a lot of mix only now, but he agreed to do it for me. And he,
that's awesome.
He's great. You know, he works very fast and kind of just, this is the way it is. And I kind of like that because I have this obsessive compulsive tendency to ruminate and not make decisions. And so having somebody else with a mix, just even in terms of the decisions of which vocals have reverb, which don't, how much, where to put the instruments, what to cut, it's easier when somebody else makes those final decisions.
Totally. Yeah, that's awesome. Was there anything that like really kind of surprised you or caught you off guard when you were making this record?
No, I mean, nothing really surprised me except for maybe the aftermath of making it, where for some reason I felt incredibly not worried, but the self-doubt, I think, is higher with my more personal records. Like this one in July, like there are a lot of first person introspective songs. So I felt a lot more vulnerable. I didn't share it with anybody for months, except for my label, and just felt like, oh gosh, I don't know if people are gonna, you know, just the normal thing I think of a lot of artists go through. And just letting go is always a hard thing, but I am glad that, you know, because the last rec before that, when you have something so muscular, it's different. I didn't feel as vulnerable.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you played any of this stuff? Have you played this stuff live yet? Or is that
only a little at what's that festival? Big Ears this year. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of the new songs, but it was so fresh that, you know, I think the next time we'll be playing is at that Rough Trade below.
Oh, wow.
The New York show at Rockefeller Center, which is crazy, but it's just like at a record store inside the place.
Right.
And I got to start really practicing, because one thing about stripped down songs is that there's only a few elements and they all have to sound great.
Yeah. There's like nowhere to hide.
So, and people like that, but at the same time, it's pressure's on in a different way than when you're just up on stage with a mic and you're not having to hold down the fort.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Well, I've been listening to it a lot, and it's a beautiful record, and it. I hope that I don't know that I will. I don't know how close you will be, end up if any tours or anything to Oklahoma, but I would love to see some of this stuff live.
Actually, there is this. I got a new booking. Thank you. And I got a new booking agent. And I've agreed to like almost a 3-month US tour. And I think there is an Oklahoma City date.
Okay.
First one. I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Awesome. I will be on the lookout, because that's only about an hour and a half from here, so that's not bad.
For life, by the way.
Sweet. Well, thank you. Awesome. Yeah. Hopefully that will work out scheduling, and I will be on the lookout for tour announcements coming soon, I guess.
Awesome.
Okay, well, we got a lot of songs to talk about that aren't your songs, so I'm going to awkwardly segue.
Amazing.
as ever, we're going to start with what is the first song that you remember.
Okay. I put In the Air Tonight, Phil Collins, and that song came out in 1981, which is the year that I was born.
Okay.
And I just remember it was on the radio all the time. I mean, it's hard with these, what is the first or what is the best?
Sure.
Because there's a bunch of things that came to mind. But when I think of the early 80s, that song it was on the radio all the time. And I love that song. Especially of course the famous drum fill,
the greatest drum fill of all time. Probably. Yeah. I know. I mean, it's such like an era defining song. And the thing that I love the song too. And I think it's a weird song to be so ubiquitous. It's like the way it's produced, like lyrically, it's like dark and weird. And then I don't know. I just think it's what an amazing song to be one of. That's kind of one of the biggest songs ever, I feel like, too.
Yeah. And you know what? The more what you just said, a few songs come to mind that are really weird, but managed to break through, like Bohemian Rhapsody, for instance.
Yeah.
Like
right.
Another song that is so beloved, but so weird. And yeah. It gives me hope that the weirdos can rise to the top of the radio charts.
Hey, yes, exactly. Before we get to the next question, do you consider yourself, or do you think of yourself as a big crier? Do you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, come on. Listen to my music.
I don't like to assume.
I don't really cry listening to... I mean, I'm a very sensitive person, so I cry if somebody like looks at me the wrong way. But sure. I definitely have songs that give me the feels in a way that never, that consistently give me the feels.
I usually, when I ask this question, it's like, yeah, a song that makes you, what is a song that makes you cry, or at least makes you feel that kind of way?
Yeah, well, I put from everybody's, most people's favorite Joni Mitchell record, Blue. It's not my favorite Joni Mitchell record, but I put Little Green, which is a song that she wrote for the daughter that she gave up for adoption, who she named Kelly, I think, after Kelly Green, the color. And I just love, I think that the sad songs on Blue are just my, like, River and Little Green, and they're so beautiful, and I don't ever get sick of that. Like the other songs on that record, the California, not my bag really, but just the Too Happy maybe.
Yeah.
Love that record though.
Yeah. This, I feel like this song, it kind of like sneaks up on you how sort of devastating it is. It's like, every line is so tender, and it just, as it builds, it just adds up and hits so hard. But yeah, by the end of it, I'm a wreck.
Yeah. Like Joni, I think about her a lot because you can trace the trajectory of her psyche changing, or her from this idealistic romantic in the early records, like Ladies of the Canyon or Song to a Seagull, to Blue, where she starts to really talk about first person experiences, like choose her a name she will answer to, like imagining how hard it was to give her daughter up. And then by the time you get to Hijira, she's jaded and she's like, maybe I've never really loved. Guess that is the truth. Like, the later you go, then there's Court and Spark, which is before Hijira, but she's like partying and doing blow and sleeping with Neil Young or whatever. It's different. So this, she get her at this really vulnerable part of her life.
I am curious, what is your favorite Joni record, if you had to pick?
I think that parts of Ladies of the Canyon and parts Hijira probably, just because to me, it's her most adult writing in a way. And it's also, I like the bass from Jaco.
Yeah, the bass on there is so good. What is a song that will put you in a better mood?
I was struggling with this but I just picked something that makes me, every time I hear the Supremes, it's a kind of a weird pick, but there's something about Diana Ross's voice that makes me really happy.
It's like this, such this pure, sweet, perfect voice. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And Baby Love is just so great. She just, those songs are just perfect little songs. And I could list 1,000 songs that put me in a better mood, but that's one of them, you know?
Yeah. It feels like one of those songs, if it comes on, I don't know, it'd be hard to be like really mad or like really upset. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I understand, you know, depending on what you're dealing with or whatever, but yeah, it's, Diana Ross has like one of my favorite voices ever.
Me too. It's so sweet.
And yes.
But powerful at the same time. It's not like that. It's not a baby girl voice. Like that those are so everywhere in indie girl singers these days. Yeah. It's just like the way her voice sounds, but she uses it so well.
Yeah. Oh, so good. All right. Everybody's favorite question. What is objectively the greatest song of all time?
Oh man, I really struggled with this. Like, I'll say my runners up were the Righteous Brothers version of Unchained Melody. That was a runner up for me. Also a runner up for the cover question, though nobody knows the original, so I overthought it. I put Pink Floyd Echoes just because, hey, that is not even, I don't even know if you could consider it a song. It's like an opus.
Right, yeah, I mean, it's like a whole side, basically. I mean, it's a song. Anything could be a song. What the hell?
I love Pink Floyd, especially, I mean, I love eras of Pink Floyd up to, you know, up to Division Bell. And I'm not one of those heads that's like, oh, I only like the really early stuff like Piper and the Gates of Dawn. Because, come on, anyone that says they don't like Dark Side, for instance, is crazy. But
yeah,
this is from Metal. And I just think this song is this perfect balance of soft and hard, and
yes,
of like rocks really hard. It has so much tension, and of course the production is impeccable. And I just saw Pink Floyd live at Pompeii, and the studio in the theater there at this little movie theater that, and
oh cool,
it was really great to see David Gilmour up close. I mean, because, you know, when we were kids, like, we didn't have the internet, so you couldn't really see what everybody looked like or watch old videos. And I never really realized how, I think the filmmaker as well thought that David Gilmour was pretty attractive because they're hovering on his lips the whole time. And but they play that song, and when they finally start singing, it's just so good.
So. Yeah, no, I think it feels like half song, half hallucination or something, whatever. Like that middle part, like there's that one stretch where it's kind of drony and kind of, I remember hearing this when I was a teenager. And I think back, I'm like, gosh, I feel like that section especially was very formative for me in ways that I didn't realize at the time. Cause like that, there's just something about that middle section that, yeah, I don't know. It gets to me. And then when it all kind of comes together and explodes, or man, it explodes, feels like it doesn't quite explode, but you know what I mean? It's,
I'm so curious what other people answered for that. Is there one song that people have said more than once on your podcast?
I'm trying to remember if there is on this one. People hate this question. And that's, I mean, which is why I put it in there. It's mostly in there to just see how people react to it. It's been all over the place. I think a recent one I did, like I've had everything from, yeah, I think I've had a Pink Floyd song on here before, but I had Glenn Donaldson I had on recently, which is another like 20 years in the making episode. And he picked Grouper's Heavy Water, I'd Rather Be Sleeping, which is one of my favorite pieces of music of all time. And I kind of loved that as a pick for this question. But yeah, it's everything. Somebody picked the Golden Girls theme song once. I think that's just
so funny. I've recently been watching Golden Girls reruns and find them just utterly delightful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think Glenn made a really great point of how in some ways anything can be the greatest song of all time, which is kind of it's an amazing thing that you could be anybody and sort of stumble upon writing the greatest thing. You know?
Yeah.
But I really like this answer, especially because it's like this sprawling, I don't know, this thing you get sucked into. And
it's a meal of a song, not a snack.
Yeah, exactly.
The last meal. Yeah.
Okay, well, what is a song that you used to love, but now you've heard it recently, or you think about it now, and it doesn't quite do it for you anymore?
Okay. It's kind of a weird answer because I do kind of love this song. I love I put the Killing Moon echo in the Bunnymen song because I absolutely love the riff that and the verses so much. But I was driving around with a friend and visiting Boston the other day. I live in Nashville now. And this came on and she was like, I really don't like the bridge of the song. I'm like, it's not a bridge, it's a chorus. But then we talked about the difference between bridges and choruses. And I don't like the chorus to this song anymore because it just is like not as good as the verse, like fade up against you. And I actually did a pretty bad cover of this once. Not bad, but it was before I really knew how to record myself. And and I got a lot better with that stuff. But it's not that I dislike it, but it doesn't really do it for me like it used to. Yeah.
No, I think that when I got your list and was kind of prepping for this, I hadn't thought about this song and I can't remember the last time I heard it. And so I was listening to it and like thinking about what you said with the chorus thing and you're right. Like the verse is so good that the chorus just really falls flat to me. Like the verse is so good. It deserves a better chorus.
That's exactly what I think. And there's so many songs where the chorus is better than the verse, but if the verse is better than the chorus, you're in trouble because the chorus is supposed to be the memorable part.
Right.
But for me, the riff and the verse is the memorable part. I mean, the chorus doesn't have to be memorable, but it's a little bit of a melodic letdown.
Yeah. I think that's a really good way to put it.
They're still alive.
I don't think they're going to listen to my podcast.
You never know.
But yeah, I thought I really like this. I really like this answer and thinking about it this way because I totally agree. I hadn't thought about this song in a while, and then thinking about it like that, I was like, oh my god, yeah, the chorus. Anyway, okay. Well, what is a song that people hate? Some people, I don't know if they are. People don't like it. You don't care. You love it no matter what.
Yeah. Well, it's not just a song though. I can name one. I'll pick like Doll Parts or something. I really still love the band Hole. And I know that a lot of people hate Hole. And I think that a lot of it has to do with the generation that I grew up in. But even before Live Through This, I've loved Pretty on the Inside, which is before she even met Kurt. And people don't give her the credit that I think she deserves for being edgy. And it's just so common that somebody will say, oh, Billy Corgan and Kurt Cobain wrote all of her songs. And I think she deserves a second look. Like, sure, she's been controversial, but she was kind of iconic to me and a big reason that I started playing in a band.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like when I was in high school, I wasn't into folk. I was into grunge and Riot Girl and screamed like her.
Oh man.
I had a great scream and I don't know what happened to it. My mom couldn't stand it. So she got me Joni Mitchell and Carole King cassette tapes. Because she hated her voice and didn't like screaming. And well, the rest is history. So
no, I'm totally with you on this one. I hadn't listened to Hole for a while. And then I don't know, it was like 5 or 6 years ago. I pulled out, Pretty on the Inside and it rules.
It does rule.
Live Through This rules. I'm like, it is a great fucking record. And the whole like, oh, Billy Corgan and Kurt wrote it. It's like, man, that's just like misogynist bullshit.
It is. Like the songs on Pretty on the Inside are so funny too. They're so un-PC, but like when I was a teenage whore and like garbage, like I just still get such a kick out of how ballsy those songs are.
I know. Yeah. That was, God, I think Teenage Whore was the first whole song I ever heard. I was just, cause I also like was super into like Riot Girl and like punk, and I had punk bands and that was my background too. Pretty on the Inside was just, it was just so raw and just in your face. And I was talking to somebody the other day and we were talking about Miles Davis, like in the '70s, but she was saying, I think it was actually Charmaine, how, like there's a rudeness to it of like, I don't give a shit. I'm like, and how we've lost a lot of that. And it feels like these days. And so I've been in this thinking of like music that is rude, but in a good way and like pretty on the inside is exactly that. And it's just so brash and in your face and doesn't care. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So I understand people don't like Courtney Love. And like you said, she said some whatever, but she made some great records back in the day.
And yeah. You got to sometimes separate the art from the artist, especially absolutely. These days. I mean, I'm not willing to never watch a Woody Allen movie again. And
right.
or it's complicated, but like it's very hard to find people that have never done anything wrong. There right. is, of course, a moral line. I mean,
right.
and a lot of people won't watch a Woody Allen movie, but it's complicated. But yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like my whole thing is, and it's like everybody has their own line, and that's your thing. But it's just like separate the two, but don't be in denial about it. It's like, yeah, okay, this person has done some really terrible things, but they also make, like, I'm not gonna, you know, close my eyes and plug my ears and pretend that doesn't exist. But it doesn't mean I can't appreciate this art or this thing, mm-hmm. this idea. But I'll get off my soapbox. okay, here's maybe another obvious question. Do you consider yourself a romantic?
Yeah. I mean, I think so. I am definitely a romantic. Maybe a jaded romantic at this point, but I've started out really an idealistic one. For my most romantic song, I found a reason. Velvet Underground song.
Yeah.
I mean, just the simplicity of it. I found a reason to keep living, and the reason is you, or babe is you, or whatever it
right.
is. And then I love that voiceover in that song, too.
I do, too. Yeah.
Recitation.
There's something like so tender about it. Like that voiceover that, I don't know. Yeah, and I found a reason, and the reason is you, or however it's phrased. Like, that's the thing that everybody would like to hear probably at one point in their life.
Yeah, and it's so direct. I love a song that doesn't beat around the bush. I think it's a classic song because of the universal sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I try really hard not to be intentionally obtuse in my writing, because mm-hmm. I started out, I think, doing that a little bit, where I was like, I don't want to be a coffee house folky. I'm going to write like songs with all about dead people or whatever. And now I've changed over the years, and there's nothing wrong with saying,
yeah,
I love you in a song.
Yeah. Totally agree. What is a song that changed your perspective on an artist, either for better or for worse?
So this is for the better. I put Jolene, but in general, I, growing up in Boston, had no exposure to country music. And most people, when you ask them back then what kind of music they like, they said anything but country, metal, or rap or something. Yep. It was like a common answer. And I never really got into country or Dolly until much later. And I had a friend who's a music writer who grew up in like Southern Illinois, Kentucky area, and was like, no, Dolly's amazing. All I knew of her was the caricature of her on TV with the
right
with the figure and the whatever, and I never knew how incredible she was. So the fact that she wrote that and I Will Always Love You, I think, on the yeah. same day, and it's yeah. such a great song. That riff, the so good.
It's so good. Yeah, the whole when I was listening to this earlier today, I was kind of struck by how sort of like the instrumentation is so sort of bare and skeletal, and like that, like it feels so fragile, but that guitar is incredible. And then it just paves the way for her voice, which is
nobody sounds like Dolly Parton. And mm-hmm. I saw her live a couple years.
Oh, wow.
I guess it was maybe now, not a couple years ago, years ago. In Boston, and it was so good. I had never seen a concert like it in my life. She played so many instruments. She has this mini saxophone. She manages to play guitar and all the stringed instruments with these long acrylic nails. and she told stories. She's a real performer. And I vividly remember just, wow, this woman was born to entertain.
That's awesome. I've never seen her. Even growing up in Oklahoma, somehow I've never seen her, at least that I can remember, unless my parents took me when I was a kid. But that sounds awesome.
People were smiling, like, all around. It was amazing.
I saw Willie Nelson many years ago, and it was a similar, like, he didn't play a bunch of instruments and stuff, but everybody was just so happy. And he was just, like, talk about somebody with, like, such presence. It was beautiful. Okay. Lyrics. What are your favorite lyrics? And can lyrics like make or break a song for you? Like if they're like bad or.
Yes, definitely. yeah. I mean, a song is only as good as its parts.
Yeah.
And lyrics are an important part of certain types of songwriting. Obviously I'm a big Bob Dylan fan.
Yeah.
I mean, that was how I learned how to play guitar with a Bob Dylan songbook my brother gave me.
Oh, that's awesome.
And some of the earliest songs that I tried to play were Desolation Row, Visions of Johanna, and that era of Bob Dylan. I mean, I love this Sad-Eyed Lady of the Lowlands.
Yeah. I can't believe nobody has picked this one before for this question, actually, because these are some of the greatest lyrics ever. Like, objectively.
With your mercury mouth and your missionary times, with your eyes like smoke and your prayers like rhymes, like, that every single line in that song could come out of a poetry book and stands on its own when you read it out loud, separate from the lyrics. And that, to me, is a sign of a good lyric. You can remove it from the music and it reads well. Yeah.
Yeah, and this song is, it's like the definition of that. When you do play Oklahoma, unfortunately, I mean, you'll be in Oklahoma City. If you have any time to stop in Tulsa, the Bob Dylan Center is located here. It has, like, all his archives.
Oh, cool.
And all his. There's actually a big concert tomorrow night that's basically celebrating Dylan going electric. That there's, like, Lee Ranaldo put together a band that is playing all this stuff here. It's very random that it's here, but yeah, as a big Dylan fan, you would probably find it pretty cool.
Yeah. I'll make sure, maybe I'll see if my booking agent can book something in Tulsa so I can go to the center.
Yeah. If you do, yeah, let me know. I know the people over there, so I could probably, like, try to arrange a private tour or something.
Cool.
But yeah, I can't believe nobody's picked this song for this question, because I think I remember being in high school or something, and just I still have it somewhere. I had a book of just Dylan's lyrics, and this song was the one, like, I had so much highlighted and circled, and it was just the best.
It really it influenced me majorly. I mean, he's not the first person to come up with these epithets for characters. Mm-hmm. But, like, so many of his songs have those, where Sad-Eyed Lady of the Lowlands. There's a lot of Towns Van Zandt songs that do the same thing, like with Colorado Girl or, you know, whatever. But this kind of style, I love, it's old fashioned, but he infused it with modernity and with more of a kind of mythical and surrealist lyricism.
Yeah, I love that. So the next section, you were only supposed to pick two, but you are an overachiever and you gave me songs for all of them. So we're going to kind of rapid fire this a little bit.
Sure. Although, I am an overachiever. It's bad. Okay.
I feel your pain. Although there's a couple of these I actually really want to talk about, but what song can you or have you listened to the most?
Again, could be so many answers. I just picked a song I really love that some people might not know, but I'm pretty sure people that listen to your podcast know this song because you're ahead. But I put the Roaches, the Hammond song.
It's a perfect song.
I love that song. And I never get sick of listening to it because of how different all their voices are. And mm-hmm. the Robert Fripp. Mm-hmm. Weird, like, I just love this song.
I love it too.
Yeah.
This was the very first episode I did of this. The person who was on, they picked this as the objectively greatest song of all time. So,
interesting.
Which I think you can make a case for it. But mm-hmm. Okay, what was the last song you completely fell in love with?
It's the last song from a new person I fell in love with. But I put Cassandra, or I actually don't, I know her a little, but I don't know if it's Cassandra. I think it's Cassandra or Jenkins' Hard Drive. I think it's kind of a brilliant song, and it kind of reminded me of Suzanne Vega a little bit, like Tom's Ooh, Diner or something.
It's a good call.
Her cold, steady, icy, laid back and suave delivery. And I just like the lyrical device. You can only use that once as a songwriter. Right. Like that's what my brother said. He's like, yeah, she can't like do another one with the same joke, right. But man, smart song.
It is. It's so, yeah, there's like something about it that, I don't know, feels slightly sort of off kilter throughout, but in the best sort of way. And it's, I don't know, there's something kind of, yeah, I love this song far more than I ever would have expected to love this song. Mm-hmm. What cover song is better than the original?
There's a ton, but I put Without You. And, you know, I love Badfinger, and I'm well aware of their tragic past. And yes. So it's not that I'm putting them down, but the emotional gravity that the covers give to this song, both covers, this Harry Nilsson cover and the Mariah Carey cover, both take it to a level that the original, I don't think, hits. I love Mariah Carey so much, and
same.
She kills this song.
She eats this song up. It is I love the Harry Nilsson version and I love the Badfinger version, but I think of this as a Mariah song at this point
too.
Because it's, okay. The sexiest song.
I put Chris Isaak, Wicked Game, and the sexiest video too.
Yeah,
I actually met him recently, weirdly, cause he lives in Nashville and he's friends with one of my friends. They had like a painting party in the backyard. And he wasn't at all what I thought he would be like. So it was weird. he was really nice, but I grew up being obsessed with that video, that song, his voice.
Yeah. The whole thing is, and the best hype song.
I put the Rocky theme song.
No explanation needed, really. I mean, it's.
Has anybody put that down before?
No one's ever put that. And that is. That is a song that is on my like workout playlist because it's the one it's like how you get started. Like you get, all right, we're going to do this thing.
Yeah.
And now I have it stuck in my head. Anyway. Okay. What is the song that means the most to you? And it's not necessarily because of the song, but you associate this with something or someone.
Well, I put Whiter Shade of Pale. I just think it's one of the most beautiful songs of all time. I also, my first concert was Jethro Tull and Procol Harum.
Oh, wow.
My parents were big hippies. So I have them to thank for my musical taste. And I just think it's a beautiful song.
I feel like that, especially, gosh, just the organ in that song, it's like permanently lodged in my brain. Mm-hmm. Like that, it is so... it's a wonderful song. So would you say this is also your favorite song? If you had to pick a favorite song?
It's one of them. I have so many. It's weird that I didn't pick any Leonard Cohen songs because I love, or you know, I have so many favorite songs, but that's definitely one of the ones I think is one of the best of all time.
Yeah, agreed. I'm curious. Yeah, like if you had to pick, like what are some of your favorite Leonard Cohen songs? I'm just curious. I'm going off script.
Winter Lady, Suzanne, So Long Marianne, The Partisan.
Mm.
I really love Songs of Love and Hate too, so The Avalanche. could go on and on, but I would never say hallelujah or anything like that. And I really wish that people would stop listening to my 20-year-old cover of Famous Blue Raincoat that will not go away on Spotify. It's like people keep listening to it and you can't control what shows up first on Spotify.
Oh, and so is that what shows up first on your page?
Right now, finally, one of my new songs has is first. But imagine if somebody was checking you out for the first time and you they're not getting an appropriate representation.
Yeah, that would be, thinking of things I made 20 years ago, like, I'm not, ashamed of it or anything, but yeah, it doesn't have anything to do, it feels like it has nothing to do with what I'm doing now.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, this was a delight. Thank you again for doing this and talking about all these songs. New Radiations out August 15th on Sacred Bones. And I guess tour announcement coming in the coming weeks or months.
Yep, exactly. Like first week of August and pretty much almost every city in the U.S. if I make it through it, but we'll see.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Hey, it's the time. It feels the world we live in now is the time. I don't know. It just feels like get out there and get in it.
Exactly. Why not? It's what I do. Yeah. And you're right. I am a lifer. So it's just part of it.
Right. So. It's like, I know. It's like people are always like, oh, you've been doing this. I was like, I don't have a choice. I don't know. Like, exactly. I don't feel like this is what I got to do. Well, I'm excited. Hopefully I will. We'll see you on the tour.
So. Yeah, thank you so much for all these many years of support. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for all the years of incredible music.
Thank you.
Once again, thank you to Marissa Nadler. Again, New Radiations out Friday on Sacred Bones. You would do yourself a huge favor to listen to it, pick up a copy, all that and more. You can listen to all of Marissa's picks in the show notes. And yeah, if you enjoy the show, please leave a rating and review wherever you listen to these things. If you want to get longer episodes with no ads, get them a little bit early and just support the cause. As little as $3 a month, patreon.com/foxydigitalis. It'll make things happen. And I appreciate everybody so much who's done that. Thank you all again for listening. And until next time, keep on listening to whatever the hell you want.